Namaste. So we take up this poem of Sri Aurobindo, The Blue Bird. Birds are representative of the soul in the animal kingdom, just as flowers are the representative of the soul in the vegetal kingdom. So very often in dreams and visions, when we see a bird, it generally means some power of the soul. Just like if you see flowers, it means again some energies of the soul. So we know that in several literature, mystic literature, bird has been often given, the significance of a bird is often given as some kind of a spiritual consciousness. For instance, swan, the most common, Hans and Paramhans. Swan is the symbol of freedom. So it's a bird which soars high in the sky. It can fly very high to the highest mountains. As the story goes, legend goes, it lives on the nectar which is found in the lotus. So, you know, it drinks only that, as the legend goes, and it has the capacity to separate milk from water. That means truth discernment. So swan is used as a bird. In Rig Veda, we have this beautiful description of the bird with one feet on ground and the other joining the sky. So she's like a link between the earth and the sky. That's what the birds are symbolically. We also have the description of two birds in one of the Upanishads, Dvasuparna. One which is free in delight and the other which is eating the fruit. So we have in all mythical, mystical literature, we have this description of the bird. And in India, the highest form expression that the bird has taken is, one is swan. The other, of course, birds which are associated with gods. One of them is peacock, Kartike, the bird of victory. And of course, the Garuda, which is the bird of Lord Vishnu and also of Sri Krishna. So today we'll read one such bird. Very often we see that Kabir in his poems, Sri Ramakrishna in some of his similes, they speak of the state of Hansa. Kabir has a whole poem dedicated to that. So Hansa is the word which goes far beyond the earth. But Sri Aurobindo brings a new dimension to it. Not Hansa, but some other bird. And that bird is the blue bird. Now, you know, if you look for blue birds are always associated with happiness, with joy, hope. They are regarded as heavenly birds. But this blue bird is a little different. So what is this blue bird? It reminds me, when we read the poem, of two particular birds known in mythology. One is Garuda, which is emerald, not exactly blue, but it is the vehicle of both Sri Krishna and Lord Vishnu, who are blue in their color. And the second is the phoenix, which is a bird which is supposed to burn itself to ashes every 500 years. And out of the ashes, a newborn phoenix arises. So she is the bird of immortality. Garuda is the bird of victory and vision. It can see far and wide. And phoenix is the bird of immortality, perpetual regeneration. Phoenix is in the Greek legend, and Garuda, of course, is our own legend. We'll read it, and as we come, we will speak about it. This is a very interesting story about Garuda. Garuda is born from Kashyap and Vanita. So there is Kadru and Vanita, two wives of Kashyap. So Kadru asks for 1,000 children. And Vanita says, no, I want only two. But each of them must be equal to the 1,000 ones. Symbolic story. So Kadru gives birth to 1,000 nagas, snakes, serpents, hostile energies of different kinds. So Daityas, etc. come from there. And Vanita asks for two, so she has two eggs. The first one, the eggs take 500 years to hatch, whereas these sons have already hatched. They're creating chaos. So the first egg, she cannot wait any longer. So she pecks, and out of it comes Aruna. So Aruna is the charioteer of sun. So we have this Arunima, Arun, you know, the early morning sun. But it is not fully prepared. So it says that, why didn't you wait a little longer? And then it cautions you, better wait a little longer for this other egg. So out of the other egg emerges Garuda. So Garuda is also regarded as the sun, equal to the sun, because, you know, it is born out of that, and it can completely, just as the sun courses like a bird, all starting from one direction to the other, so Garuda can travel all around. That is a very special bird. And then it, of course, goes to fight with that Kadru's children because they are creating havoc. And they have asked Garuda that you are our elder brother. We have enslaved your mother. You bring us immortality nectar. Then we will release. So Garuda is both wise and strong, powerful. So he brings the nectar of immortality. But not without a fight. All the gods fight. They deny the nectar. But ultimately Garuda wins. He is such a powerful bird. All the gods, including Indra, is defeated. And he takes the nectar of immortality and carries it down to earth and tells the serpents, no, you can't take it unless you are pure enough. I have brought it to earth, but now you have to prove that you are an adhikari by being purified. They don't care. And Garuda destroys all of them. when Lord Vishnu sees all this, he is the Aditya, he takes Garuda as his own vehicle. And the rest is, of course, history. So Sri Aurobindo's poem. The poem is Blue Bird, as if blue is an adjective to the bird. But very interestingly, the very first line is amazing. I am the bird of God in His blue. So the blue bird is blue because it's filled and suffused with the glow of the Lord. That's the beauty of the blue bird. It's not its own unique color. It is fully taken up by the divine, taken up by the Lord. I am the bird of God in His blue, divinely high and clear. Divinely high and clear. I sing the notes of the sweet and the true. Beautiful combination. And I keep reminding whenever people say truth is a bare reality, truth is a harsh reality, no. Truth is always sweet and harmonious and beautiful and delightful. And if it doesn't have these attributes, something is missing. There is a place where Mother describes the vision of a world. She says everything there was seemingly as if divine. But something was missing. And then she says that something was joy. Joy, you know, with love, with beatitude it comes. So I sing the notes of the sweet and the true, for the gods and the seraphs hear. Human beings are not ready to hear me. What does it sing? It sings the glory of the Lord. It brings down the hope and nectar of immortality to rejuvenate earth. But human beings are asleep to this bird. They are tuned to the crow's cow cow or the cock's cock-a-doodle-doo. Maybe a sparrow outside. But this bird is heard by the gods and the seraph. They know that this bird is passing by. And now comes that phoenix aspect. I rise like a fire from the mortal's earth into a griefless sky. So phoenix is in the Greek mythology the symbol of avatar. So you see, swan is a one-sided bird. It goes from earth to the heights. But this is the bird which goes to heights and brings something for earth. That is the beauty. That is the avatar. It's not just a liberated bird. It can move up and down the ladder of consciousness freely. That's what Sri Ramakrishna spoke of as Jeeva Koti and Ishwar Koti. The mother speaks of that there is a bird which, this Ishwar Koti beings who can move up and down the ladder of consciousness. So she is the bird that rises like a fire from the mortal's earth. So even the wings of Garuda are described as having a golden yellow hue. And phoenix is merging into the sun. Even Garuda, if you see the description, original description, the wings are merging into the sun. So you can't see beyond a certain point because it's all about one with the infinity. I rise like a fire from the mortal's earth into a griefless sky. That state, that height where grief cannot come, cannot touch. And then while it is rising, it leaves something for earth. And drop in the suffering soil of His birth, fire seeds of ecstasy. Even as it is leaving up, It is dropping something, which are fire seeds. So they are not just fire of seeds. They'll blossom into countless forms. Ecstasy, which will take a million shapes. Now again, both Garuda and Phoenix come together. Pinions. Pinions are that part of the feather which help the flight. My pinions soar beyond time and space. Though I am connecting the earth to the higher worlds through the subtle ether, but actually my flight is into the beyond and my wings are supported from there. From there I draw the energy, the power to do this two-way communion. My pinions soar beyond time and space into unfading light. So this is the bird which goes into the house of fire and draws all its energy from there. It is solar powered in the real sense, powered by the divine supramental energy and force. My pinions soar beyond time and space into unfading light. And then when she comes back, what does she bring? I bring the bliss of the eternal's face and the boon of the spirit's sight. So whoever is touched by this bird, receives something from this bird, it brings for that person the bliss of the face divine, and along with that, the boon of the spirit's sight, that sight which can see far and wide into triple time, that sight it gives to earth. I measure the worlds, not just world. As we know, Shurbindo, there are many system of worlds described in the Vedas, the Puranas, not just one world, many, many thousands of worlds that other day we were reading. I measure the worlds with my ruby eyes. So now comes a very interesting stone. And for some of us who are conversant, generally in the market, diamond is regarded as the most prized stone. But spiritually, ruby is regarded as Ratna Raj. That is the word for ruby. Spiritually, it is considered as the best stone, not diamond. And it is just as diamonds are forever, because they don't break, you can't. Rubies also are like that. So ruby is the symbol of wisdom and strength, but here, because they are red, so they combine the earth and the supramental wisdom. That's what Mother has said. It's goldish red, but more and more towards the red. So the ruby eyes, which can scan everything. So ruby is the stone. I'm not promoting the stone. And I don't know. At one point of time, I knew about gemology. And the ruby always fascinated me. But ruby is that stone, which is a symbol of the highest wisdom. And ruby eyes, concentration. Ruby is another stone which is supposed to give a power of concentration, tremendous concentration. So diamond is not the only one. Ruby is also there. I measure the worlds with my ruby eyes. Why Shubhendra is using the word measure, not scan? See, that is a beauty. So measure is where every detail is known. When you measure something, scan is I see this room. If I have to measure, I have to go from one point to another and everything that is included by the measure. So I see this world not only as a vast something, but in all its details. This is the supramental wisdom. It is all comprehending, all apprehending. So simultaneously it sees the totality of past, present and future, but also knows the details of every aspect of creation. That's what we see in Sri Aurobindo's writings. I measure the worlds with my ruby eyes. I have perched on wisdom's tree. It is sitting on the tree of wisdom. But which wisdom? That wisdom which can, supramental wisdom. Thronged with the blossoms of paradise. What does it eat? Not the lotus honey as the swan, but something else. Fruits of paradise. Shubhendra, in one of his poems, he says, that you have transformed my senses into something that whatever I eat gives me the taste of fruits of paradise. So this is the original sense of prasad, that the whole thing changes into fruits of paradise. So you're sitting on the tree of wisdom, thronged with the blossoms of paradise, the flowers. It's very interesting that bird of paradise, which is, you know, the bird which is associated with the mother's signature. The mother gave a very interesting name to it. She said it's the supramental bird which stays where it descends. So wherever it comes, it doesn't leave. So the other day I was telling someone, you know, people have all kinds of ideas. They said, yes, sometime when people are very troubled with life, they turn to God. I said, first of all, it's not factually true. I mean, there are many people who are very happy with life, but turn to God. But something interesting is there. Yes, there are many people who, because of distress, turn to God, and because of their difficult situations, they turn to God. It is, let's take it as true. But there is not a single instance in my knowledge. I have met so many people who, after turning to God, because they have distress, will turn to world. I said, this is one-way traffic, which is very strange. They don't turn. They will go through everything in life, endure all the rigors of the journey. After all, difficulties, challenges will come. They will not turn away from God. They may have their own issues with why you did this. But from the world, people do turn to God in distress. But from God, they don't turn to the world when they are distressed. They turn to God only. That distress is yours. You only relieve me. This is something very amazing. It's actually factually true. And I have met a couple of people only who at some point tried to do that. But they just couldn't. It was so impossible. They even regretted. We know the famous cases, of course, even here. You can't turn away from the divine despite all the challenges. So, the bird of paradise, whomever the mother catches, catches forever. Stays where it descends. Thronged with the blossoms of paradise by the streams of eternity. What are these streams of eternity? So, these are the waters flowing from the supramental world. This is a very interesting word for this. How Shrivinda is used certain expressions which are in the Upanishads in totally different, I mean, beautiful sense. So in Upanishad we have Tasmin Napo Matarishva Dadati. So it's about apa, it's water. So all these waters of creation which enter into creation, revivify it, they come from Matarishva, divine mother who holds it. So the womb is there from where these waters come down to earth. Streams of paradise, the rivers, the rivers, the seven rivers of the Vedic Rishis. Here, Shobindo says, by the streams of eternity. What an expression this is. That is the eternal, and this is the temporal. And the streams of eternity are linking the eternal with the temporal, the permanent with the transient. So there, the bird sits on the borders. Like Sphinx sits on the borders of eternity as well as in the netherworlds. Both places you have this Sphinx. So here we have this bird which takes its station on the supramental. Its wings are into the supramental. It goes back and forth, bringing immortality, bliss, the supramental vision to earth, and climbs up, drinks, eats from the drinks from the streams and the fruits of paradise. And then it flows down. Nothing is hid from my burning heart. You know, the most foolish thing one can ever do is to hide from the divine. And there are so many instances. We have narrated it, but one that comes, nothing is hid from my burning heart. Of course, one is a very sweet one, where Champak Lalji boasts to Sri Aurobindo, and for 1 hour he has forgotten himself. Sri Aurobindo keeps waiting. Then he gets up, and then Sri Aurobindo asks him a few questions. He says, but you know everything. Why are you asking me? Sri Aurobindo says, yes. Under his breath. When mother was asked, "Mother, you know everything, why are you asking?" She would say, "To see how conscious you are. Nothing is it." This is that instance where Krishna Swami Iyer had brought his brother and Sri Aurobindo looks at him and says, "Oh, you are the one who had who was in the army of Maratha army general." He says, "Sir, how do you know?" He says, "Oh, you want a proof? Okay. You will leave your body at the same spot where you had left in your that life." And exactly after 20 years, he was admitted to a hospital named after the same general in Delhi, where he had fought the Pathans and died. And that becomes the... And then his brother reminded, "You remember what Sri Aurobindo had told?" And when we read records of yoga, several places, Sri Aurobindo used the word T3, times triple vision, where he is able to see the past, present and future. And far back into the future, some of the disciples he has written who they were. And of course the future he has already revealed to us. "Nothing is hid from my burning heart." That supramental fire is burning here and nothing is hid. "My mind is shoreless and still." Not just still, shoreless. It has become infinite. Infinity. So there is no end. It's endless space. Sri Aurobindo speaks of these two very interesting dimensions. One is the eternal, eternity. And the other is time eternity and space infinity. Meaning thereby space extending, extending infinitely. Time running through eternity. That's where the supramental time vision stands. "My mind is shoreless and still." What is the bird singing about? "My song is rapturous, mystic art." This is what Sri Aurobindo's poems are. This is what Savitri is. The book, mystic volume of the Book of Bliss. This is how Sri Aurobindo describes. "My song is rapturous, mystic art." Ananda, which has created this universe, mystic art. All this universe are rhythms of Ananda. In everything there is some rhythm of Ananda. So she is singing about this Ananda which dwells in all things. Not just dwells in all things but builds this world. "My flight, immortal will." So where do I fly? I fly where the immortal will takes me. And nothing can come in the way. Nothing can stop me on the way. So what a beautiful description. It's of course many of Sri Aurobindo's poems are obviously his own experiences. They can be taken as biographical. They are biographical in the deepest sense. So when people write biography in terms of outward things, it makes very little sense. So we'll read it again. "The blue bird, the blue bird, I am the bird of God in his blue. Divinely high and clear." We know it's the color, blue is the color of Sri Krishna as well as Sri Aurobindo. The shades are a little different. Sri Krishna is a little darker, Sri Aurobindo is a little lighter. That's the difference. So that's the two shades of blue. And blue is, of course, we know the highest space, the etheric space. That is the color of, we can take it mind. Right up to over mind, merging into the supermind, where it changes into a golden hue. That's how we see in creation, blue sky and the sun merging towards that. "I am the bird of God in his blue, divinely high and clear. I sing the notes of the sweet and the true. For the gods and the seraphs' ear, I rise like a fire from the mortal's earth into a griefless sky and drop in the suffering soil of his birth fire seeds of ecstasy." That's why reading Sri Aurobindo, especially Savitri collected poems, is the sure sought treatment for grief, because from the griefless skies he is dropping fire seeds of ecstasy. My pinions soar beyond time and space into unfading light. I bring the bliss of the Eternal's face and the boon of the Spirit's sight. These are the boons that Sri Aurobindo brings to us. Wisdom supernal and bliss, which is not just the incident of an hour, but eternal. I bring the bliss of the Eternal's face and the boon of the Spirit's sight. I measure the worlds with my ruby eyes. I have perched on wisdom's tree, thronged with the blossoms of paradise, by the streams of eternity. Nothing is hid from my burning heart. My mind is shoreless and still. My song is rapture's mystic art, my flight immortal will.
Thank you.